You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE Securities Exchange has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow with Greg Davies, Chief Trader at Kratos Capital, and also David Shapiro from Sasfin in Johannesburg as well, from Melrose Arch. Gentlemen, and David, I'll start with you. I was talking to Greg Davies this morning, and we were looking at ShopRite after the operational update, and the share price rocketed 15% plus. Greg quite shrewdly said, "Yeah, this is a short covering rally. If I was going to do anything, I would be getting short of this thing now." Greg, you were absolutely right, weren't you?
Yeah, I suppose a bit of luck, really. Anything. Look, got a lot of clever traders around me, so sort of listening to the chatter amongst them. That move to 167 looked like, as we were saying earlier, algos had been instructed to cover in a short position or something. The share price actually fell back. It actually made a sort of mid-afternoon low of 148.56. At one point, it looked as though it might sort of close in the negative for the day. It had quite a strong rally in the last hour, closed up 5.7%, but a lot of volume going through, R1 billion worth of shares trading on a day where the market's done about 17. So it certainly did its part.
Yeah, it did. And David, I think that the overall market, the negativity which pervaded the market throughout the day, I mean, it was a relentless sell on the all share index anywhere. I think that affected ShopRite. It may have closed up 10% if it hadn't been for the overall negativity.
Well, I understand where Greg's coming from, because the irony is that, you know, their numbers were still down about 14-15%. So they produced minus 14-15% odd earnings, and the share goes up 15%. So try fathom that out. It was a better second half than first half. That's about the best thing that we can say about the numbers. They're still not pointing towards any major improvement, you know, when you start to analyze the results. So I think it is short covering. I'm not sure this is long lasting. You know, it'll bumble up in that. I still think that if you look at Pick and Pay's results, they're probably in a better space than ShopRite at the moment. And against the backdrop that was painted today by Eskom, I think SA Inc. companies, consumers, are in for a very, very tough time. So, well called, Greg. I think there's more, there's going to be more of the same meaning. I think it's going to lose its altitude soon.
Yes, indeed. And talking about losing altitude, Massmart came out with their results, and it was around about lunchtime. And Greg, you sent a text message, and you said, "MSM, not good." And I looked at the screen. I was actually interviewing Magnus Haystack, who is a realist. He's not a pessimist. He's a realist. I was interviewing him.
There's no bull on his head.
He's certainly not, but quite rightly so. He paints a very unpretty picture. But anyway, and it was down 21% when I spoke to him, and I think it ended up down 15%. How can you have two such differing retail performances? I mean, massive, massive companies, Massmart and ShopRite, and yet Massmart going in completely the opposite direction. Greg, start with you.
Yes, and I think that's what probably took the wind out of ShopRite sales a little bit as well. People got a little frightened and said, well, you know, things aren't that rosy. I think part of ShopRite's story was the beginning of a turnaround. The Massmart just shocked the market. And the guys are looking through it, some IFRS changes and leases that weren't in the previous set of results, which are in this. But again, the algo is doing the damage here. With the low point just before 2 o'clock, it was down to 27%. I mean, I was looking at some charts back to 2008 levels. We're back to the future here on the JSE. It did recover a little bit. But, I mean, to say it recovered and it finished 15% down at 49.80, again, you know, this news only broke at lunchtime. So the volume, 158 million rands worth. So it was definitely in play. And, again, wild traders. Traders definitely earned their money that trade Massmart today.
Greg, you know, the question is, how can the management be so bad? You know, in other words, this is, yes, part of it is the economy. I know that things are under pressure, but somewhere along the line, you have to point at management to get it so wrong and to make the kind of losses that they made. If you compare it with other companies in that area, whether it's a Spa, whether it's a Pick and Pay, ShopRite, whatever, none of them have come out anywhere as bad as this one, and one's got to look and try and assess where things have gone wrong. I know that management's being changed, but I think this is really a shocker of a result. I think shareholders right to abandon it. And maybe I didn't see what Pick and Pay did today. Maybe Pick and Pay starts to Pick and Pay clicks or some of the others start to attract the switch. Yeah. If you still have to remain,
Pick and Pay a little bit firmer, up 2.3%. Mm. Yeah, 66.19.
Just like Dis-Chem up 2.3% as well, but still 23.10. That's been my good short of the year, Greg. My Dis-Chem short as against my British American Tobacco short, which is around about 20 rand underwater at the moment. Talking about management and mistakes, David. I mean, who's the genius from Walmart that bought into Massmart? They must be thinking, what on earth have you done?
You know, you must go back to that time. I think at that time, Africa was a very attractive region. There was great views that with a billion people, there would be huge prospects for retailers and that South Africa would be the springboard of going into Africa. I think what they didn't realize, whoever was looking at Africa, and we sold it. When I say we, there were a lot of people here who sold Africa as the next China, in terms of growth, or the next rising tiger, whatever expression you wanted to use. But I mean, to be honest, what no one realized is that sub-Saharan Africa is made up, I don't know, 50 odd countries, and every country's got a border, and every border's got guards with their palms out. And, if you want to do anything, it became an absolute nightmare to actually get goods in there and to do anything in those areas, as we saw with Woolworth in Nigeria. Mr. Price has had similar issues. So, I think that's just a strategy gone just belly up and wrong. I'm surprised that they haven't done anything and haven't pulled out and just offloaded it.
I think the African story is an interesting one because every fund manager I speak to, I don't know if they're being patriotic because of the fact that they're Africans, albeit South Africans, or whether they actually believe it. But there is this youthful population. But I can't see it. And I've always said, whenever I do a presentation or an interview, when people get enthusiastic about Africa, I say, you've got to be very careful indeed, because although there's a youthful population, the fact is that that's fine when your economy is growing and when your youthful population has jobs. But when they don't have jobs, then it can come back and bite you, because then there can be civil unrest and then there can be problems. Yeah. And that's what's happening in South Africa. And that is evidenced by the appalling unemployment data that came out today, both David and Greg, at 29%, up from 27.6%, I think it was. Extraordinarily bad numbers and quite distressing, actually.
You know, I took out the numbers. Apparently, it's 6.7 million people that are unemployed here. That's not my number. That's from Stats South Africa. So I looked up in the U.S. and I said, what's the unemployment there? It's actually 5.975 million. So just call it 6 million. Mm. So U.S. population, 328 million. South Africa population, 58 million. So it means the current base of taxpayers has to support that huge amount of unemployed people. So it leaves very little. Those unemployed people have to draw some kind of support in the form of grants, etc. What it does do, it puts an enormous, enormous load on the fiscus, on our balance sheet, And I'm trying to give a comparison with America, where you don't have this issue, where there's sufficient money to pay off social grants or payments of that kind of nature. So it's a massive load on us. And as long as we have that load, we're never going to get out of it. We're never going to have enough money to invest, to reinvest in growth. So it's a tragedy. How do we get out of it? I don't know.
It's called growth. I mean, you've got to have growth-friendly projects and business-friendly policies. Yeah. Greg, you've got two kids, and both of them are employed. I've got two kids. One of them's still at university. The other one is employed as a teacher. But I was speaking to the one that's at university, and she said to me today, dear Annabelle, and she said, no, as soon as I've qualified, I'm going to leave. And that's very sad, because she's a talented girl and she could become a taxpayer and a pillar of the community. But Greg, there are people that are being born at this very second now in various parts of South Africa. And I keep on saying this, but so stop me if you're bored with it. But there are people today being born that will never have a job in their life in South Africa.
Yeah, and that's a problem then, as David was saying, that every nation does have poor people, and the wealthy people actually, in some way or the other, have to take care of them. But the amount of people just getting bigger and bigger. I think the only thing which can save us, and maybe I'm dreaming here, is a massive sort of bull market in commodities, you know, gold, platinum, palladium, iron ore, all of those things, having a massive rally, and that could be the thing. You know, we've even tried the tourism thing. I don't think we've had any sort of kick on from the 2010 Football World Cup. You know, you're always hearing these stories of these tourists being robbed. So we're just not making it. We're just scoring a lot of own goals.
Well, let's have a look at it this way, Greg. Talk about mining boom. Platinum group metals have done extremely well. Gold shares have done extremely well. But you look at the largest job cuts recorded in that labour survey today. Mining, minus 12.4% year on year. Mm. Now, I think we're getting to the point where we're not even mechanised, David Shapiro, like Australia is. No. I mean, we're not even close. I mean, there's going to be another 10% next year and another 10%. And if you look at Europe in 1900, Germany had, I think, something like 55% of its population, France the same, Italy the same, of their populations indulged in, or rather employed in agriculture. Today it's 3%, 4%, and 5%, but they adapted. I don't think we can adapt when it comes to the loss of mining jobs. There are towns out there that are wastelands.
Yeah. I mean, even in Telkom's numbers, which came out a few weeks ago, I mean, they very, very quietly sort of mentioned there that let go of 12% of the workforce. Mm-hmm. So it almost seems that's the way to do it, because whenever these big mining houses say, listen, they're going to have to cut back on jobs, then you get pushback from the unions, the government almost steps in behind them, and it's, you know, that's the biggest problem with Eskom, to circle back to that. You've got 49 or 50,000 people working there. I'm not sure if we need that many.
Greg, not at all. I think a lot has to do with labor law here, which inhibits any kind of, which really acts as a hindrance to people employing people, you know, other people. Labor unions are very strong. So on the mines, no one wants to expand. I always love listening to Peter Major, who puts it a lot more eloquently than I can about the array of metals and what is here and what can be exploited. But as long as you have our labor laws here, no one's going to do that. There are too many rules. We don't lay out a carpet. We don't put a red carpet and welcome investors. When we do, we give them a checklist and say, this is what you have to do. You have to employ this person. You know, you can't do this. You have to buy your goods from this person and so on. And there's a whole lot of lists. And also, you have to give away a third of your company or 25% to XYZ as well. Mm-hmm. So people don't want to do that. It's hard enough making money out of mining. It's a huge risk business. So anybody opening up businesses, it doesn't want those kind of obstacles, and globally you can go somewhere else. So we actually put our own obstacles in our way to growth, and that's when, you know, when we talk about reform here and we talk about structural reforms, these are all the issues that we have to address, and someone's got to be bold enough to actually open it up, and a lot of people would be employed for a lot less than the minimum wage. They would do it. Go to all those unemployed people on the street corners, etc. But government won't let them. You know, everything's controlled by unions. So, you know, this we're just going round in a circle.
We did see Anglo-American coming out. Lindsay and I were discussing it on Monday, saying they're pulling out of the thermal coal businesses here, citing the mining laws, the charter there. But I think exactly what you're saying. Can't get any traction in the coal mining business because we don't have 30% black ownership, and then they're just fed up with the struggle, which seems unnecessary.
Financial services increased their employment to the tune of 4% year on year. I mean, who are those? Who
That's
are you
all
servicing?
Compliance officers.
Exactly, it's Kratos and Sasfin. Who are you servicing financially, you lot?
No, we have more compliance officers than front end people here. You know, the biggest problem here is we could grow significantly more, but you try open up an account, if it's a trust. You know, and I have to tell you an amusing story here.
Go on.
I mean, it's and Greg will appreciate it. We had an issue, and Greg knows that whenever you open accounts, they need, and it's a trust, you know, you need information on the trustees and the beneficiaries and everything like this. And in one of the trusts we had, a certain person had died back many years ago. We need a death certificate to complete all the paperwork, and it was impossible to get this death certificate because I think the person had died way back in the 1930s or 40s. So you know what they did? One of the chaps who was responsible for opening went to the graveyard, went to the cemetery, took a picture of the tombstone and brought it back. He said, "Is this sufficient proof?" You know?
Yeah, that's really, really good.
Bureaucracy gone mad.
Lindsay, you've got no idea.
I always imagine it's something. Imagine we're playing a rugby game, and there were 10 referees on the field, and only two wings and two backs.
It's the same thing.
Okay, let's have a look at the markets now, gentlemen. I love these stories, but by the way, nothing. I'll talk about that off air. That's for another time. Let me give you the spot prices just to give a backdrop to our conversations. Let's have a look at what the rand is up to start with. It's okay. It's 14.18 against the US dollar. It's 17.26 against the British pound, and the euro rand is 15.81 with the euro dollar 111.50 ahead of the Fed, of course, tomorrow, which is going to be an interesting one. The gold price doing quite nicely. Thank you very much. Up a couple of dollars, just under $1,430 an ounce. The platinum price is $872, which is down 9. Greg, you have to come in with palladium again. ShareNet, I have to speak to JC Lowe about their palladium feed. What is the palladium price, please?
Tell him we definitely need it. I've got lots of clients that are trading Sibanye, and they need to know these things. Palladium, it's down $35, $15.19. So it really does swing around quite a bit.
That's because of Mr. Trump, of course. So the Brent crude oil price is $64.10, which is up 18, or 0.3%. David, you haven't got a screen in front of you. But
I do.
Oh, do you? Well, then give me the Dow Jones, S&P, et cetera. That's slightly weaker, I think.
Some of the work, David.
funny enough, I've got 15 minutes delay here because we can't afford the full package. But the S&P is down.
You've got too many compliance officers.
The S&P, it's actually steady now. It's still over 3,000. It's down at 0.28% at 3,012. NASDAQ down at 8,268, which is down 0.3%. And for some reason, FactSet hasn't got an agreement with the Dow, so I can't give you the Dow. They don't want to pay the royalties.
Just go to shanet.co.za, David. I keep on telling you this, but you're stuck in your ways.
Yeah, there you are, Greg.
Inertia.
I must tell you something now for the Bulls. Is that I was just listening to, I was just watching Bloomberg's, and I heard that Goldman Sachs see the S&P at 3,100 by the year end, which is a pretty good move. And then 3,400 next year.
Good.
Which for me as a bull, that's
and this is the same company that called the oil price to 120 when just before it fell to 30.
You took the words out of my mouth. The worst thing is that they never get anything right. So take it with a pinch of salt.
Lindsay and I had a colleague who once went to try and get a job there at Goldman Sachs. Apparently, you need to pass 14 interviews. On the 11th interview, he told him, "Listen, I'm not coming back here."
How is Brian Coyne, by the way? Okay, top five major movers on the JSE today. Let me start with because I'm in a bullish mood. ShopRite up 5.75%. Harmony up nearly 5%. Vivo, forget that one. Goldfields up 2.75%. Kumba Iron Ore up 2.5%. David, I have to go to you here. There's Harmony, Goldfields and Kumba Iron Ore, and I bore on about your aversion to resources stocks, but you can't ignore what's going on here. It's quite fun.
No, I'm not. I like good movements. I'm averted to them for longer term portfolios, for a retirement portfolio. But the one that always bemuses me is Kumba, which is up on the iron ore price kicking up again and apparent shortage in seaborne supply. So the more they try to talk iron ore price and the more they try to go short on it, it keeps going. And the more
it's a sort of hated bull market.
I know. But you can't ignore it. And I don't want to go short on something like this, where we've been calling it short from the time it was 50, 60, 70, wherever it was.
Yes.
And now at 120 or wherever it is, round about that area. You don't want to go short of it. There's something happening there that no one can quite grasp.
When everyone's telling you it's too high and it, you know, there's a bubble and it's going to burst and it just keeps going higher, then you must know you must be on
the
right side.
You've got
to
drop.
We were talking about this the other day and saying 25 rand per share for Kumba Iron Ore whenever it was, and it wasn't that long ago. I mean, imagine if you'd have had the perspicacity and the patience to buy it at 25 to 30 rand a share and actually held on even to 200 or 250.
He's paying
us 500
dividends. You would have got the money back in the dividend in 1 6-month dividend. That's crazy.
Lindsay, you know, if you look at the whole industry, there are very few iron ore miners who are not making money at these levels. Even the marginal operations, I think, have costs of no more than $40, $50 a ton or $60. It's just sand. The hardest thing is to get the sand to the end user. But, I mean, fundamentally, it's not a difficult operation. But generally, I think anybody in the iron ore industry now is just coining it. If you look at Glencore, I think it's the only mining house with very limited exposure to iron ore.
Yeah.
And for that reason, a lot of other issues as well with Glencore. But it's actually been one of the laggards in the in the diversified miners, simply because it hasn't got that exposure and hasn't been given that boost.
On the downside, Massmart down 15.5%. Hammerson, talk about that in a second, down 7.9%. Intuprop down 7.3%. Old Mutual down 5.5%. Capco down 5.5%. There's some big stories. Okay, Gregor, where you go with the Old Mutual one?
Peter Moyer has won the case to be reinstated at Old Mutual. Yeah, so a temporary reinstatement in saying that the board of directors at Old Mutual, I think, failed in their duties dismissing him. So they might appeal against the judge's decision, but for the meantime, he's back.
He's called the whole board delinquents. So it's going to be super awkward tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock.
Also, he's coming back with Boris Johnson type enthusiasm. You know, we're going to rebuild Old Mutual, and that.
Yes,
and
I saw
from my point of view, this is terminal, and I think that's why Mutual down about 5%. It's not going to work.
It fell when the story first broke, you know, and then now it's fallen some more when the stories have almost swung around the other. When they fired him, it fell, and when they got him back, it fell some more.
Yeah, I think what happens is he's not going to be able to manage.
No,
I think he's lost the faith of people. He's lost the credibility, and all that he can do now is kind of negotiate a super duper whopper payment package. You know, so he's going to say 100 million or nothing, you know, whatever it is. I don't know.
Yeah.
He's going to have one hell of a new fund. At Old Mutual's expense.
Let's have a look at Hammerson and let's have a look at Intuprop as well. Is that a Brexit story? Is that a Boris Johnson hangover story? Is that what's happening?
I think Hammerson came out with their numbers yesterday, which, to be honest, I didn't go through them in great detail, but market fell yesterday has continued. But it is a Brexit story. The pound down at 121. And I think that's what's given the rand a bit of a boost, because we do tend to benefit when the pound or the euro comes under pressure, and the dollar. But I think it's the crosses that are just supporting the rand. Because, I mean, if you read the Eskom story as well, there's hardly anything to celebrate with 20.7 billion in losses. So I think, also a lot for us to digest. But the rand seems to be taking it. I thought the rand would have been a lot lower, but
Some PepsiCo money coming in, and I hope the people at PepsiCo have a look at the Walmart story and say to themselves, let's try and avoid this. JSE Limited, Greg, I mean, this is one of our favorite stocks. They came up with their results. We haven't even mentioned them. It says, notwithstanding the constrained operating environment, the JSE remains in a healthy position with regard to cash and capital. Although the first half has been financially difficult for the JSE, this first half performance is not a reflection of the fundamental strength of the business. And then it goes on to say, which I think is childish, and I'm sorry, Nicky Newton-King.
We say nothing bad about them.
I'm sorry, Nicky Newton-King. You say the JSE is well positioned to benefit from a positive change in sentiment. What positive change in sentiment? It's like, you know,
she's saying if there were one, it would be.
Well, that's like me going to my bank manager.
Nikki's stepping down, huh?
Yes, she is, and we're coming down to that. But, yeah. But if I go to my bank manager and say, excuse me, Mr. Shapiro, I know I'm in an overdraft at the moment, but I'm very well positioned to benefit from a positive change in sentiment towards me. In other words, if I get a job. I mean, it's exactly the same thing. It's very. I'm not saying it's stupid because that's unkind, but it is a little bit optimistic. Well, what do we do with the JSC? Just carry on selling it?
Yeah, the very first sense announcement is she's stepping down. If things are going to go so well, you know, with upswing, then why is she stepping down? I know probably she's getting to that age where you'd want to, but you know, if you think the business is suddenly on the beginning of a turnaround, I think it's the captain leaving the ship.
She's got a tough time. I mean, you know, when we look at volumes daily, when we look at where the JSCs are, the non-performance, I think it's been a very tough time for her. She's been there for a long time. I've got a lot of fondness for her. I think she's done a lot of good things for the JSC.
She's good.
And I can't say anything bad. But it's a tough position. You know, no one wants to be in this position as a leader. Because, you know, while she says sentimental change, I think in her heart of hearts, I think we all know that there's a very tough road ahead.
To be fair, that quote was not attributed to Nikki Newton-King, the CEO of the JSC Limited. That was a PR company that came out with that. But I do think it's slightly naive when you say that sort of thing, Greg.
She must have signed off on it,
Greg, give us the closing JSC indices and the all-important volume. Maybe the volume first, please.
All right. Yeah, we've done 17.6 billion.
Nice.
I mean, a lot of that helped by that frantic trade that we had in those two retailers, obviously ShopRite being, I think, just over a billion rand. But let me give you the indices. Banks down 1.55, financials down 1.81, industrials down 0.97, retailers down 0.91. The gold index, the only one in green, up 0.41. Platinums were flat. Resource counters down 1.12. That left the market down 1.37, which is 793 points down. Really, really was an uncomfortable day. For investors, 57,242 are on the all shares.
And finally, David Shapiro, your story of the day, if you've got one.
I was going to use the Peter Moyer story. You know, for me, that was the big story of the day. That the fall in Old Mutual shares, which is to now a 52-week low, and also that until we get resolution on this, I don't see the share going anywhere. It's tough enough. When things are going well, but when your management are fighting, it's a very, very difficult, it's a very, very difficult situation. We had plenty of stories. I think Massmart, ShopRite, and Peter Moyer, I think just take the cake.
It's a very similar situation, Greg, to a Seinfeld episode where George Costanza is employed at a company called Play Now, which makes playground equipment or something, and everybody hates him, and they say, "Listen, we'll pay you out. You've just got to go." And he says, "No, I'm going to stay. I've got a year's contract." And so he goes to his office every day, but everybody hates him, and eventually they ban him from the executive toilet and that sort of thing. It must be the same for Peter, for Mr. Moyer at Old Mutual. I mean, who's going to bring him his coffee in the morning, for example?
Probably fine when he gets his tag that normally opens the door tomorrow.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time this evening. David Shapiro from SASFIN in Johannesburg and Greg Davies, Chief Trader at Kratos Capital. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox. strictlybusinesspodcast.com, made possible by Prudential Investment Managers.